John Hanson here on the Wintrust Business Lunch, taking you up till 1 o'clock. Thanks so much for joining us. We got a packed show, so let's get right to it. We got Tom Gimbel. He joins us nearly every week from the LaSalle Network. Tom, thanks for hopping on with us. I know a lot of people have fallen into the work-from-home routine and maybe a lot longer than they anticipated. Any sign, any prognostication on when you think more businesses are going to start bringing people back to the office?
Yeah, I think there's twofold. Number one is when they're going to bring people back to the office, and number two is when are they going to be hiring? Starting with the latter, they're hiring now.
Mm.
This is as good as an economy, John, as I've seen in 25 years. The only thing that is the shadow over it is the reentry into hospitality, restaurant, travel, hotel. And with summer coming and the vaccines coming, I think we're going to see June, July, August be just great months for everybody. And I think that we'll start seeing companies return to the office after Memorial Day.
After Memorial Day, yeah. And then that's sort of the latest guidance we've gotten from the TV side of things, too, with our company. You never know. Things obviously change. And I know that that's been pushed back on and off here and there. The question is, first of all, can companies require a vaccine to come back? Have you talked to any or you know of any that might require it or at least strongly encourage it?
Yeah, there's going to be an interesting intersection. I think there's going to be a lot of companies that are going to say that they're requesting people to come in, and in order to come in, you have to have gotten the vaccine. So I think they're going to loosely label it that way with some of the folks that I've been talking to who are running companies. But they want people back in the office, both from a culture perspective as well as an innovation perspective.
Do you think that some companies are going to allow like a hybrid, like, hey, 2 days a week in, 3 days out, not only for safety, but because a lot of people maybe make the argument they do better at home?
Yeah, I think there'll be, for two things again, John. I think number one, companies are going to phase people back. So it'll be 1 day a week for the first couple of weeks, then 2 days a week for a few weeks, then 3 days a week, and reacclimate people to this process, number one. Number two, what I think they're going to do is more of the company will pick which days, the employee won't pick which days, meaning everybody will work from home on Wednesdays, or everybody will work from home on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and everybody else will be in Monday, Wednesday, Friday. But if you only do half and half and you do it, you still are losing out on synergy. You want as many people together as often as possible.
For people that are like, oh my gosh, these offices are going to be empty. Everyone's going to downsize. No one's going to need an office anymore. I think that was real early pandemic talk. Have you noticed a shifting vibe there? That, no, in reality, like you've kind of said, that there's still obviously a big benefit to having everyone gathered together.
Yeah, we're in a situation, being the cliche king today, John, of a rising tide lifts all boats. And what we're seeing is everybody will promise people the world and say, oh, everybody can be remote when things are great. But things aren't going to be great for forever. And whether it's the fourth quarter of this year or next year or 2 years from now, is when earnings aren't met by companies. They're going to say they're not being met because we don't have everyone together. And when there's a higher turnover rate at companies, they're going to say people are turning over because we're not together. And eventually they'll come back. But I see, you know, the footprints may change, but I think people are still going to have, the big companies are going to have considerable footprints.
What about traveling for work? The idea of getting people together just for a meeting, you know, you fly across the country for a day or two, something along those lines. Do you think that the Zoom world has maybe a little bit more grip there for at least a while longer?
So I think it's going to actually be an interesting dynamic. What I'm predicting is that you're going to see a birth of entrepreneurial companies that come out of this in the next 18 to 24 months. And those people, to fight the big companies, are going to have to get on airplanes and go meet people face-to-face. And the big companies, because they're a little bit slower to move and to pivot, they're going to keep doing Zoom because they're going to say, look at our bottom line. We're making more money. Our margins are getting fatter by not having a huge travel and expense budget. And the small entrepreneurial companies are going to say, you know what, then we're going to take this opportunity to get in front of clients and be face-to-face. And then you'll start to see the pendulum shift.
All right. This question deserves more than a minute, but it's all we've got. You mentioned a rising tide or raising all boats. Does you throw this COVID relief package as part of growing that tide more? What are your general thoughts?
Yeah, I think, you know, like a lot of centrists, I think it's a good thing that they're helping out people who need it. However, giving money to people who are gainfully employed and never lost their job seems to be aiming money in the wrong direction. And I think first and foremost, we've got to make sure that the people who are long-term unemployed and are trying to get jobs have a cushion. And secondly, or actually this is more firstly, is we've just got to spend as much money as we need to get shots in everybody's arm.
Yeah.
And we have to give people the chance to even beyond the physical ability to fight the disease, the emotional stability to feel safe.
Oh, Tom, I love a good centrist like me. Thanks for joining us, founder and CEO of LaSalle Network. Talk soon, my friend, okay?
Take care, buddy. Bye-bye.
Okay. I imagine a lot of bosses out there listen to the program or people that lead companies, and they often think, oh, I wonder what my employees are really thinking about something. Sure, I could go ask them, but they're going to know they're talking to the boss. And I bet there's some employees out there that are listening and they wonder, oh boy, I wish I could tell my boss what I really think about this without them knowing who I am. An anonymous answer. And it's something that companies have strived for over time. Caven Clawson and the folks over at True Teams, True Public, may have figured it out. Caven, thanks for joining us here today.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So we've talked a couple times, Caven, on different shows, and we've done fun questions that people in the public can answer on True Public, and they're great, and that's still a great app. But now you guys have introduced True Teams. Talk us through it.
Yeah, and really, here's where it started, John. Something's happening in the business world right now that I think is a seismic shift. COVID has totally changed the way people are thinking about work. I'm talking to CEOs and HR leaders all over the country right now, and one of the big things we're hearing is the days of everyone being in an office together, for many companies, not all companies, but for many companies, that's over. So now we're going into this world where we're going to be in a remote world. But actually, what I'm hearing, I think this is going to be really interesting to your audience, most companies are saying that a hybrid model is the best model for them. When you actually ask employees, what do you want? Most of them say they want to be in the office occasionally. But overall, what we're finding is productivity of people working from home has been up for most companies. But the challenge has been morale, right? How do you get a sense of how your people are really doing when you can't see them in person, right? Mm-hmm. John, you can't look across the room and say, oh, that's how Bob and Mary are doing anymore.
Right.
Now, that's where True Teams comes in. We're a really lightweight, easy-to-set-up system where people are able to get a real pulse anonymously of their people. And it's built really for the new generation of employees, because I think so many young workers especially, they're coming into businesses, and they can't have that camaraderie that they had before. They can't have that sense of getting to know their boss, getting that mentorship. And in that world, although the productivity is up, although so many love working from home, there are a lot of challenges around how do we understand our people when they're not actually in the office?
And the best way to do it is to ask them. But I mean, I've been in companies where they send me like an Excel file and I have to type out answers and I send it back. They clearly know where it's coming from. And so I know I'm not going to answer honestly.
Yeah. So that's a key tenet of what we're doing with True Teams, because A key point we make to leaders all over the country is, look, garbage in, garbage out. You have to start at the source of the data. If your employees don't trust your survey and they think, John, when I was just out of college and I was working in a corporate job, I would get these surveys asking what I thought of my boss and leadership. And I was always very careful to be radically honest in those scenarios because I didn't want it to come back and bite me. And I think a lot of employees all over feel that same way. So anonymity is really key. And what True Teams is really doing is we're messaging to the employee first. And we're saying, look, this is a place where you can be candid about your workplace. And it, by the way, it's not just things about, it doesn't have to be negative. In many cases, these things are very positive. And in fact, as companies are starting to sign up for True Teams, what they're finding is giving employees that voice to not only share how they feel, but be able to see how they compare to their fellow coworkers. That actually gives them a sense of trust with leadership. And I think many are fearful of what happens if we really get candid feedback. And in actuality, it's the opposite. By really asking them truly and wanting to listen, that unlocks incredible morale boost and ultimately retention. It helps you retain your best people.
Okay, so this is all great in the abstract. Through some of your customers, can you give us an example of a couple questions, either negative ones, positive ones, quick response ones that you think exemplify the points that you're making here?
The most popular question on True Teams, every company in the system is using it right now, is a measurement of stress. Now, this is a unique one for this moment in time. One of the big things we're hearing is employees love this question that comes out weekly on True Teams, where they're able to say, how many days in the past week were you stressed from work? Many would shy away from this data, but what we're finding is, imagine a CEO or a leader of a company being able to look at the stress levels of their entire company, broken down by gender, by department, by all these different factors, and get a deep sense of how their people are doing. Because what we're finding is, questions like that, measuring stress and mental health, just by asking, it's a powerful, powerful tool. That's one. And then the other one that's so interesting right now is measuring the connectivity of people. Because what's been lost in a remote world, more than anything, I think, is that water cooler moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's something amazing. You know, even Steve Jobs, when he was designing that Apple campus, they designed it in such a way where you would have employees from different departments interacting with each other. And what we're trying to do with TruTeams is have people across different departments have a better understanding of one another and ability to connect to one another. Because if you're just siloed off, all the engineers are in engineering, all the marketing people are in marketing, all the HR people are in HR, working from home, you lose that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think those have been the two areas. Can we measure the stress of people, and can we get a better sense of their connectivity and try to help them connect better? Just those two things alone, I think, can help companies a lot.
I can envision this being used for those big questions, too, but could you guys see that people want to use it for even small things? Like, I need an answer. Like, do you want to have an ice cream social? Like, things like that. Do you envision that world post-COVID, too?
Yeah. Okay, so there's a new generation of worker coming up, and many people listening to this right now are going to nod their heads and smile a little bit. This Gen Z millennial worker, I'm kind of at the older end of this millennial group, but there are some stereotypes about these younger workers that are true, right? They are fickle. They leave jobs quick, right? Like, we hear this from everyone. Like, they leave jobs, and in those exit interviews, they say, I didn't feel like I had a voice. So this idea of voice is really powerful. One of the things we do on TruTeams is crowdsource decision making. So you're absolutely right. Whether it's what snack should we add to the snack room, or when should we host our next all hands meeting, we're encouraging leaders in a very simple way. We don't want to make a lot of extra work for them, but in a simple way, crowdsource those decisions. Because, John, if you just give people a little bit of autonomy to say, hey, we're going to have a special day off for the company. What day should it be? We're going to add this new policy. Which would you choose? It gives those, especially those younger employees that desperately want that feeling of autonomy that they don't have the career experience to get, they feel it a little bit. So that, you're right. Sometimes it's these small, simple things that just go a long way.
On the back end of things, I know when people often conduct surveys from some places, it takes a long time to get the results, right? Whether it's polling data or whether it's even, you know, someone's got to, like I said, the Excel file or send an email and rank these things. Not the easiest thing to break down. You trust someone that has to go do that and they spit out a report. How does it work on the back end with you guys?
Well, we're changing the cadence of the survey. The survey has always been this, you know, most companies do a once yearly engagement survey or half yearly engagement survey. We're changing that philosophy, right? And we're trying to educate the market and say, what if there's a better way? And we think the better way is have a consistent cadence of how your people are doing. Weekly or biweekly is how we train companies to do it. And what that really means is it really operates more in real time, John. So imagine as a leader, you're able to put out questions short, fun, with a great user experience for your employees, instantly get feedback in real time, not just for yourself, but also a view that allows other stakeholders within the company to see how are things happening in real time. Because one of the things that's changed from COVID is waiting one whole quarter or for your yearly survey is frankly too long. What we're hearing from some companies is they had all kinds of personnel issues, morale issues that they weren't able to diagnose. It'd be like if you only, you know, had car gauges that only checked once a year. No, you need to be able to have a pulse on that consistently. And I think that is the future. It's like measure weekly and the power of that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that because things change so quickly, especially in this era right now, but just in general, right? Especially this hybrid work from home, things are going to change. In Chicago, things, our mood changes based on how sunny it is and or not. And that can impact a company's bottom line in terms of how they react to those things.
Yeah, and like, so think about this. You know, my grandfather is an old Alaskan. He's 94 now. When he went to work for a company, he was there for a really long time, and things move slow. Even technological advancement moves slow. Now we're in this era where it feels almost like chaos with the amount of technology and change, and everyone's so transient right now. I think that with the pace of innovation and the pace of change, something like TruTeams can be a really nice barometer of where you're at the company in a simple way.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not... And the other thing is, like, you want to make this data usable. I think one of the big problems with a lot of the products like ours frankly, is you ask all these questions of all these people, and then it's like, well, what are we going to do with this?
Mm-hmm.
Right? It sounds like a lot of work. So one of the things we're trying to think about with this is asking the types of questions that we can actually have a meaningful outcome of. You know, a lot of times companies will deluge their people with surveys, ask them all these questions. It only leads to more frustration, John, because they're like, hey, what kind of new healthcare policy would you like? Well, once you weigh in as an employee, you're probably expecting that there's going to be some change there. So I think there's kind of like a new paradigm that needs to happen around frequent feedback, crowdsourcing decisions, helping employees get to know each other better, but making all of this actionable so it's ultimately not leaving employees going, wait a second, what did I do that for?
Right, exactly. It's an interesting balance. 630 timed in that it's so timely. I had a mini breakdown today. I'm so tired of being home by myself working all day with no one around. Well, something like True Teams can give them a voice. Caven, we're out of time. Just really quickly, if people are interested, whether they're a boss or an employee, to encourage their company to do this, where do they find out more information?
Yeah, trueteams.co. That's trueteams.co. We'd love for you to try it, weigh in. We'd love to hear what, you know, what challenges, what's working or what's not working with your remote and hybrid teams.
That's great. Caven Clausen, thanks for your time. As always, we appreciate it. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. John Hansen in for John Williams. We've been talking all morning and here into the early afternoon about optimism and feeling good. And I know traveling is one of those things that people are starting to feel really good about. But one confusing aspect of this is rumors of vaccine passports or places you need to go and whether or not you need a vaccine or not. So here to break it all down is Nick Ewan, senior editor of thepointsguy.com. Nick, thanks for joining us.
Yep, thanks for having me.
So I am curious, as the vaccine becomes more readily available, and let's say it becomes to the point here soon where if you want one, you're going to get one. Okay, we can all see that light at the end of the tunnel, right? And if you don't want one, you're not going to get one. Is the impetus to get a vaccine going to be more likely to come from airlines that are requiring anyone to get on their plane to have a vaccine? Or is it more likely to come from destinations that require that vaccine to even get off the plane?
So I think it's going to be a combination of those two, along with a willingness of individuals to actually get the vaccine. So it comes down to individual preference, but I think we are going to see more and more of a push for some type of vaccine verification from destinations as well as from travel providers. And we saw from the survey that we conducted earlier this month that there's a lot of appetite, a greater willingness to do business with these providers and to visit destinations that are requiring some proof of vaccination.
Is that popular, requiring proof of vaccination?
It's really a mixed bag. Among folks that are really excited about travel, they haven't taken trips in some cases 12 months, 18 months, going on 2 years. There's clearly an appetite there. We see huge spikes in demand for the spring and into the summer and into the fall. So I think there are a lot of folks that are excited about it, but there are some others who say have privacy concerns. There are others who have concerns about the safety of the vaccines who, you know, would still want to travel. So I think it's going to be, it's challenging to walk that line between providing this type of assurance to those who are vaccinated and who are want to travel while still reflecting some of the concerns of those who are concerned about privacy and the safety of some of the vaccines.
I'm not eligible yet for the vaccine. I know a lot of my friends aren't either. And I know some of them are worried that I'm not going to be able to travel because I haven't gotten the vaccine yet. I haven't been able to. Do you think that anyone requiring, any flight requiring it will wait until that moment that I had talked about earlier, that it is so readily available that it's not a matter of access, just a choice at that point?
I think any type of vaccine requirement is going to take a lot of time, not just to be announced, but then to take effect, because right now there's a lot of paper documentation. There isn't one centralized system. So while there might be a desire to visit places or to do business with airlines and destinations that are requiring this, there's still a lot of groundwork that can be done. So if we're talking about a universal requirement across the board, I think we're still far away from that. And remember, too, that internationally, even though it is coming out now that more and more Americans are going to become eligible, you know, May is being thrown out as a timeline for any and all ages to get the vaccine for adults, there's still less progress being made internationally. So I think we're going to see a focus domestically first, before something like that expands to be international. But I think we are still a ways away from having any type of universal requirement by a travel provider or by destinations to, you know, to in require proof of vaccination.
It's interesting because do you think that there's some places that would want the vaccine requirement, not only because they want to keep their own citizens safe, but because there's a will of some people out there to only go to places that require that vaccination?
Well, that's exactly what we saw in our study. 49% of the likely travelers said that they would be more willing to visit a destination that required proof of vaccination because of that that air of comfort, knowing that they were going to a place where they would be around folks, around other tourists that have received a vaccination. And, you know, that would give them that additional layer of protection. So there certainly is that desire, and we're seeing that already, and I think that's only going to grow as more and more folks get vaccinated and they really think about being able to finally take those trips, whether it's an airline trip, a cruise, visit to a hotel that they've been putting off for months or in some cases over a year.
The summer will be here quicker than we know it. Last summer was a lot of national park visiting. I know RV rentals were all sold out. Cabins up in Wisconsin or Michigan on Airbnb, pretty much all sold out. What do we think for this summer? Is it going to be more traveling or in the air, or do you think that the road trip is still a popular option, especially since people kind of want to plan it now and that there's still some question about traveling later?
I think we're still going to see that emphasis on activities that are deemed safer from an exposure risk. So our survey as well found that the most popular types of trips are visits to state or national parks, public beaches, larger resorts, much lower percentages for cruises and other places where you're going to be around other individuals. Of course, international travel is going to remain largely restricted, again, depending on the country. So even with the increasing utilization of vaccines across the country, a lot of these so-called COVID-friendly trips, road trips, staying closer to home, renting an RV, those, I believe, are still going to be popular into the summer until we really start to see wide scale across the, not just the country, but the world, vaccination efforts come to fruition.
Nick, I'm going to put you on the spot. I got a Canada trip, a fishing trip planned at the end of June. Am I going on it?
Oh, that's going to be tough. Canada has been very strict with some of their requirements, so I would put that in the most likely not category. Oh. But I do think that there are going to be a lot of more opportunities to travel starting in that time frame. I think a lot of them, unfortunately, are going to be more domestic, and I'm right there with you. I canceled a bunch of international trips. I'm looking forward to hopefully one around Thanksgiving. Hopefully things will be, you know, much more back to normal by then. But yeah, sadly to say, I'm not sure that that's going to come to fruition.
Well, that just ruined my weekend. No, I'm just kidding. No, I feel the same way. It's funny because last year we had the same trip booked, and we were around this time, April. We're like, well, it'll be open by June of 2020. Yeah, okay. We got it just a little bit off. Really quickly, should I buy my flights if I want to go to Vegas in like October? Should I just book it now while prices are still a little bit low because those things are going to spike soon?
I think we are already seeing a lot of spikes in terms of demand for travel. We haven't necessarily seen an across-the-board increase in prices. The big thing to keep in mind, though, is starting last fall, a lot of airlines started waiving their change and cancellation fees that had long been a huge source of profitability. So you're no longer, in many cases, on the hook for $200 per person if you wind up having to change your dates. So I would say for sure, just make sure you look at those change and cancellation policies for the airline with whom you're booking. You probably have more flexibility to book now than you would have, say, last March or last summer.
My dad has already texted in that he's just not going to listen to you, Nick, and just have to wait and see what happens with Canada. No, I appreciate your honest assessment there, and we appreciate your time, Nick.
Yep, thanks so much for having me.
The Points Guy, thepointsguy.com. Now time for the Wintrust Business Minute with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A fourth Amazon Fresh store has opened in the Chicago area in suburban Bloomingdale. The store features computerized high-tech shopping with Amazon's dash carts and voice-enabled Alexa terminals. Cameras, sensors, and scales know the products you're buying, so you don't have to go through a checkout line. Other Amazon Fresh stores are in Naperville, Oaklawn, and Schaumburg. The CEO at Bolingbrook-based Ulta Beauty is stepping down. Mary Dillon's departure is effective in June. She was just one of 40 women to run a Fortune 500 company. Ulta's president Dave Kimball will succeed Dillon. The electric truck startup Rivian is expanding its footprint in downstate Normal. The company is preparing to add up to 10 million square feet to its manufacturing plant there. The new space is being rezoned to manufacturing from its current agriculture classification. Rivian is working to bring its electric vehicles to market this year. I'm Steve Gwizdanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
And agribusiness headlines, Steve Alexander.
Big day today, John. National Working Moms Day today.
All right. Shout out to the moms, yeah.
Yeah, give some special attention there. It's also Women's History Month, so what better day to talk about women working in agriculture? And one of the things that they do better than men in agriculture, in my opinion, is network. They're really good at networking. Near Monroe, Wisconsin, Lisa Kivirist is involved in a sustainable agriculture networking program called Soil Sisters, which supports women farmers with resources and opportunities.
Women are a very collaborative group, and that idea of sharing of knowledge, sharing of the stories of how you did something or how you would do something differently if you did it over, are really empowering and helpful, especially as one gets their business started. And it's interesting because it sort of defies a traditional business model in why would you share with your potential competitor how you do something, right? How you learn. But we women in agriculture have really learned that that's how we all succeed. That's how we all grow, is by supporting each other.
Lisa says the Soil Sisters networking event started over a potluck dinner 12 years ago.
And that has grown from probably a dozen women meeting at our first potluck to a local network of over 200 now. We also run the Soil Sisters annual event, which is the first weekend in August. That's the largest women farmer-led event of its kind in the country now. So it all stems from those relationships. And also, too, by knowing other women farmers in your local community, that's a really smart business strategy from a marketing perspective.
And along with being a soil sister, Lisa also runs a farm and a B&B near Monroe with her husband and son. She's a writer, too, including the book Soil Sisters, a Toolkit for Women Farmers, that you can find on Amazon. Checking commodities, Chicago Board of Trade right now. Corn is down about a penny. Beans are down a half a penny. And wheat is trading about 4.25 cents lower. And at the Merck, live cattle up 80 cents right now, 120, 4,700. Lean hogs are down about 15 cents at 91.35. And feeder cattle trading at $148.47 a hundred, up about $2. And that's your money on 720 WGN.
You know, I kind of feel bad for everyone who loves St. Patrick's Day, right? Because God willing, we had one bad Christmas with this all messed up. We had one bad Thanksgiving. Valentine's Day we got last year, we didn't get this year, right? Most of these holidays we missed one, but St. Patrick's Day, poorly timed because unfortunately it's different 2 years in a row. Doesn't mean it can't be fun. And here breaking it down, all the great things that are happening across Chicagoland, is Jason Lesniewicz, a director of cultural tourism with, of course, Choose Chicago. Jason, hello.
How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm feeling optimistic. I know that that is in the air. I'm sure it is at Choose Chicago, too. And while I said that it's a little bit different this year, you know, we've had a year to plan for maybe a different St. Patrick's Day. A lot of fun things going on, right?
Yes, absolutely. You know, it's such a tradition in Chicago, St. Patrick's Day. And although the parades and the river won't be dyed, there are great ways to explore the city. Shamrock our blocks, if you're used to going down to the Southside Irish Parade in Beverly, still go down to the neighborhood. The parade committee has a program called Shamrock Our Blocks, where people are decorating their homes, their cars, street poles, yard signs. And so it will be very festive down in the neighborhood this weekend.
I love the idea of also trying to visit some authentic Irish places, some bars and pubs, some there on the south side, some all over the place. Got any recommendations for us where we can safely visit and grab a beer or two?
Absolutely. One of my favorites is Chief O'Neill's in Avondale. And, you know, I recommend them, traditional Irish fare, great beer. And if you want to be outside, they have an amazing beer garden. So that would be one that I would recommend. If you're downtown and you want to check out the green skyline, which will turn green, you know, this weekend, you can go to the Dearborn, owned by two sisters from Ireland. They have great Specials on beer and dinner, and even some, you know, just some specials for St. Patrick's Day this weekend. So those would be two I would highly recommend.
As we continue to look for things to do outside, boy, getting on one of those boats on the river seems like a good idea.
Yeah, if you want to jump on Shoreline's lake or river cruise, they are running this weekend. And if you do the lake one at night, you'll definitely see that skyline lit up in green. You know, you won't see that green river, but, you know, our skyline's so iconic, all lit up green will be really neat.
Just use an Instagram filter. Take a picture, color it green, it'll look fine. It doesn't matter.
There you go.
All right, so today is March 12th, 312. So a lot of people are saying it's Chicago Day because that's our area code. You mentioned this weekend getting on the boats. You know, we did this in September, and I never thought I'd be a person to do a staycation. But we rented a hotel downtown. We visited places and walked around places we never visit. We live on the north side, and we say, oh, we have this great city. A staycation, what a great option this weekend.
Yes, you know, this weekend's great. You have St. Patrick's Day going on. There's great hotel deals. So anyone that wants to just kind of get out of their house and take a break, our hotels are ready to welcome you. You know, they're abiding by the safe and opening responsibly rules for that the city has put forth. So great weekend to do a staycation. Very Chicago weekend with St. Patrick's Day. Sunday's also Pi Day.
Yeah.
So 3.14. So head out and get your favorite pizza. Obviously, we're pizza capital of the world. Every style imaginable. So a great weekend to do a staycation.
Yeah, really. I think with Pi Day on Sunday, and you can either go out for pies of the bakery kind or the pizza kind, I feel like since it falls on a weekend, really it's pie weekend, right? And I think that everyone, if they have any guilt about trying a different pizza place tonight, Saturday, and Sunday, no, don't have guilt about that. That's okay this weekend.
Absolutely. Take it all in. And yeah, I have my favorite pizzas. Everyone does, right? Your favorite pizza place across the city, different styles. But definitely the, you know, the traditional pies, Bang Bang Pie Shop, Who's Your Mama, Justice of the Pies. So many great places to pick up a traditional dessert pie as well.
I'm a tavern style guy. I like the corners of that. Ooh, that sounds so good. Okay. I know everything's been virtual this year, and there's still great virtual events that are happening and needed for charities and organizations. But if you actually want to gather safely, there's actually a run walk that you still, have spots available for this event tomorrow.
I believe there are, you know, definitely go online and make sure there are reservations because, you know, everything that's being held in person has your best interests at heart in terms of being safe. And so there is a 5K run this weekend for St. Patrick's Day. So, but don't show up. Make sure you have a reservation because they're going to keep you safe and distanced so everyone has a great experience.
Yeah.
And that's what, you know, opening responsibly is all about. We just want everyone to be safe. And so the restaurants, museums, hotels, you know, make sure you know that you need a reservation for most of these activities.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned that about doing it safely, and I think it's up to the restaurants and bars too, and for the most part, they're all going to do it too, because look, a couple blemishes here or there, we don't want to risk going back down in capacity, so I really think, and you know, correct me if I'm wrong though, but business owners, patrons alike, I think everyone has the will to do this in a safe way, because we know that if we do this collectively, there's a better chance we'll continue moving in that direction.
I agree. I think everyone wants us to continue to reopen. Our numbers have been great. The city's health officials have been great. And yeah, the bars and restaurants, no one wants to get shut down. We don't want to go backwards. So if everyone does their part, I think this trend continues and we can, you know, start gathering in even larger numbers or having more outdoor events and in-person events. So I completely agree, John.
Ugh, a bar and beer in a bar or a little whiskey, club soda, that's my drink of choice. Ugh, cannot wait. Jason Lesnois, thanks so much for joining us and all the information at ChooseChicago.com, correct?
Yes, ChooseChicago.com, everything you need to know about planning anything to do in the city.
That sounds great. Thanks so much, Jason. Okay, that is going to do it for me here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. My name is John Hanson, filling in for John Williams, and I'll be back on Monday. You can follow me on Twitter or Instagram if you choose. John Hanson, that's J-O-N-H-A-N-S-E-N. TV. Yes, I have two names that you can spell very incorrectly. John Hanson TV. Catch me on the Jam weeknights at 6.